Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that is the living embodiment of the fact that a week is a long time in politics. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
It's hard to believe, Steve, that a week ago today, Boris Johnson became the UK's worst ever Prime Minister. But what have we learnt about his government 1 week on? We have to make clear at the start, Steve, the fact that we have a Boris forfeit. So we have to talk about Boris Johnson as either Mr. Johnson or Boris Johnson, or now it seems the Prime Minister.
Yeah, Prime Minister Johnson or the Prime Minister are also acceptable pseudonyms for the man formerly known as Boris.
Not sure if acceptable is the word I would have used, but I get your point. And if we don't do it, we have to make a prediction, which is the worst thing in the world because this podcast is notoriously bad at predictions. However, you made the prediction last week because you sinned on the Boris scale. And I made you do a prediction of which woman would be made one of the four great officers of state. And you got your prediction right because you said Priti Patel would be made Home Secretary, and she was.
So it's always good to actually make an accurate prediction.
I have been thinking about this and wondering if I will often mention that we on the podcast make really bad predictions, but I'm wondering actually if it's that my predictions are really bad, and they can my ones are so wrong they drag down your correct ones. Yeah,
it's entirely possible. We'd have to do some statistical analysis, and I'll be honest, I would consider that to be far too depressing.
If anyone fancies doing a PhD in it, though, listeners, do get in touch. What does, though, the appointment of Priti Patel, what does that tell us about Boris Johnson's cabinet?
Priti Patel's appointment, along with Sajid Javid, is quite an interesting kind of couple of appointments. Primarily because it tells us what kind of right-wing government we're going to get. Now, there's an awful lot of, kind of like, I would say, kind of like borderline hysterical kind of like comparisons that have been made about the Tories, the ERG, and certainly Johnson online from some of the more, let's say, more concerned individuals of the left who have been throwing around kind of like accusations of, you know, essentially saying that this would be a far-right government. Now, what you can see by the appointment of Javid and Patel, these people from an ethnic minority background coming into government in very senior roles, two out of the four great offices of state are now held by ethnic minorities. That is a sign that this is a hard right government, not a far right government. And that is something that is worth commenting on in this day and age. There's a lot of assumption that due to various bits and pieces of Steve Bannon getting involved with kind of Brexit and offering advice to Boris Johnson and things like that, that Johnson was going to kind of jump on that more kind of Trumpian approach, which is much more in line with the far right and kind of like white nationalism. But we've not seen that with these appointments, because at the end of the day, a far right administration does not appoint ethnic minorities to senior key positions like this, and they certainly do not appoint an Asian woman to be Home Secretary.
But I thought that Boris Johnson was Britain's Trump, and that's why we love him. That's what the president said at his rally, Steve, and everything.
Well, let's be honest, it's not like the Donald has a good grasp of British politics, so I think we can take everything he says with a grain of salt.
I thought that whoever was the new Prime Minister could probably create a little bit of goodwill by appointing some new talent to the cabinet and getting rid of some of the deadwood. Chris Grayling, speaking of deadwood, has gone, though apparently he was going to be offered a job and then resigned, which is just
astounding on so many levels. Like, if there's one person that you get rid of, learning from the mistakes that Theresa May made, is you get rid of Chris Grayling.
In just the same way that football teams can have the first name on the team sheet, I think the first name off the team sheet, surely, would be Grayling. But also a chance to appoint some new talent, because Theresa May was rather bad at appointing new talented ministers. So we saw people like James Cleverly, also BME background. He was appointed made in the cabinet as chair of the Tory party. We didn't see the people like Tom Tugendhat put in the cabinet. Again, Tom Tugendhat isn't a real person. He can't be because he's got such a ridiculous name. We didn't see people like him being appointed.
But we did see the likes of Johnny Mercer being made a minister over the past couple of days.
I was talking about young talent, though.
From the Tories' perspective, he is. Just to kind of give the other kind of side of this, though, at the same time as promoting up some of the younger bloods in the Tory party, moving them into cabinet, moving them into ministerial positions, Johnson also managed to kind of make some interesting removals, which, if you're looking for competence, don't make sense. He basically got rid of Penny Mordaunt as Defence Secretary. Now, Mordaunt has a history in the armed services. She's very well liked, very well respected by the armed services, and she's gone now, seemingly because she didn't back Boris Johnson enough. I caught it.
Okay. No, I think you're right that Jeremy Hunt also was removed from cabinet. I think he was offered defence.
He was offered defence.
Turned it down because he didn't want a demotion. But I think...
Well, the other thing that's come out from this was that not just he didn't want a demotion, was that he didn't think it was fair to get rid of Penny Mordaunt.
May's cabinet was generally more about trying to have a balance of those who were in favour of leaving the European Union and those who were in favour of remaining, or it became sort of hard Brexit, soft Brexit. This cabinet isn't that. This is a cabinet of people who are more loyal to Boris Johnson personally, and it seems committed to a policy of no deal Brexit on the other.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a definite case to be made that this is a cabinet of loyalty rather than a cabinet of ideology. When you look at the about faces that have been done by some of the more kind of like softer Brexit types, such as Amber Rudd, Matt Hancock, to a degree maybe you could say this about Sajid Javid, although obviously his position on Brexit has never been quite as set as some of the others. They have basically decided, if you want to be harsh, sell their principles down the river to maintain ministerial office and maintain the ministerial car. Now, in some ways, you could view it maybe as a little bit of a positive, is that a lot of those kind of like softer Brexiteers are the more competent individuals from the old cabinet. Hancock, for instance, yes, he's seemingly sold out on everything in regards to Brexit, but he's not been a bad, for a Tory, from my perspective, health secretary. He's stuck around and is now in place because he sold out on those principles. There's a bit of kind of a good side, bad side to this. Yes, we've got a government that is 100% committed to no deal, seemingly, at the moment. But at the same time, we've kept some of the better Tories actually in place.
That's far too optimistic for my take. Moving slightly on, what's been a little bit depressing is seeing quite a few people on the left, Kerry-Anne Mendoza, for instance, from the fake news site The Canary, talking about how somehow... What she said was that these black and minority ethnic Tories were turncoats of colour. There's a certain degree of, from some sections of the left, not as much as Spikes would like to make you believe,
yeah,
but almost that essentially these people are Uncle Toms.
There is, unfortunately, a section of the left that seems to work on the assumption that if you are a person of colour, you must be on the left, and if you're not, then you're not really a person of colour. This isn't anything new. I remember a few years ago where I believe it was Kemi Badenoch, who's a Conservative MP, and I think she's been made a minister, and James Cleverly, who you mentioned previously, is now the chair of the Conservative Party and attending cabinet, if not in cabinet.
And there's about 47 cabinet ministers now. It's insane.
But Badenoch and Cleverly, I remember, were having a discussion online, but off the back of it, a lot of people were questioning effectively how black they were. Effectively, because of their backgrounds or because of their ideology and their beliefs, people were basically questioning whether or not they were authentically black, whether they were an authentic person of colour. Which is never a good look to come from anybody who's, white, without being funny, because no white person has the authority to question a black person or an Asian person or any persons of colours you know, lived experiences. I can almost guarantee you that James Cleverly and Kemi Badenoch will have been on the end of racist abuse at some point in their lives. That's not, just a sad fact to life.
Not even Grace Blakely, who I think was telling Aisha has a career to
decolonise her feed, yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand it. I could understand criticising Priti Patel for essentially conducting her own foreign policy when in government and not telling anyone. I could understand criticising her for supporting the death penalty in the past, although I think she has recanted now.
Yeah, which apparently she has.
The viral videos don't tell you. I could understand criticising the cabinet for, say, appointing Jacob Rees-Mogg as leader of the House and someone who is not very keen on abortion, say. The fact that they've appointed Gavin Williamson, the assassin-faced baby, to education of all places, when he voted against same-sex marriage and now is, in his part of his portfolio, having to deal with protests outside schools from people who don't want their children to be taught about same-sex relationships and the fact that they exist. Criticise all of that. Don't criticise the fact that... It comes back, this certain people on the left seem to assume that if you look a certain way, you must believe a certain thing. And rather than attack the... rather than go for the ball, they attack the man or woman or what have you. And I don't understand it. I just find it incredibly childish.
Yeah, and I think there's something quite interesting about a lot of the elements of the left that do this sort of stuff. In my experience from looking at a lot of this stuff that I see online, it tends to come from white people. It doesn't necessarily tend to come from like people of colour themselves. In fact, what you'll often find is that the people of colour who are involved on the left and are leftist in and of themselves, like, say, Sunny Hundar, a political commentator, used to run the Liberal Conspiracy blog, I think
it
was.
Yeah. I wrote for it back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Mainly about Phil Wallace.
There's a shock. But Sunny Hundar had some very interesting takes on this on Twitter, where he basically was saying, hey, if you actually look at a lot of, like, I mean, I think he's Sikh, so I think he was coming at this from, like, the Sikh perspective. And if you look at an awful lot of Sikhs, so even though they're all people of colour, an awful lot of them are naturally conservative in culture, and that actually a left-wing Sikh such as himself is, you know, very unusual. And he was kind of making that point that actually, surprisingly, people of colour are as varied as white people. Some will be left-wing, some will be right-wing. Yes, the circumstances that they find themselves in the UK and the rest of the world may influence that a bit more, if you want to go for some kind of like class-based analysis and things like that. But they are just as likely to hold opinions which I, as somebody who's relatively left-wing, like, as they are to hold opinions which I dislike, because they are people and they will run the whole gamut of political opinions.
I think the people who do this and assume these things about people from ethnic minorities as well, they tend to be the sort of people who assume that essentially you cannot be racist to be on the left. And you see this with a lot of the anti-Semitism stuff in the Labour Party. They basically assume, well, if you are left-wing, you are therefore an anti-racist campaigner, and therefore you cannot be racist.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about the Labour campaign for cognitive dissonance. Final thing I want to say on Johnson's cabinet is, you're right, it's a loyalty cabinet, and it's trying to learn from the mistakes of Theresa May, because she had a lot of cabinet rebellions over Brexit, and she's trying to stop them. There, in that cabinet, there is a smaller cabinet, which the journalists called a war cabinet, because that's what journalists always call it. And that's got a bit of pushback online from people who don't like Second World War analogies. So we're just going to split the difference and take a line from one of our favourite cult US sitcoms, Arrested Development. And we're going to say that the six ministers who are going to meet every day to discuss no deal prep, they are part of the Alliance of Magicians. Open brackets. We demand to be taken seriously. Close brackets. Now, trying to think about what the direction of Boris Johnson's government is going to be is really hard at the moment, partly because of the advisers he's appointed, which we'll go into in a second. But maybe you get a little bit more of an idea in terms of where we're going on Brexit with the six people who are in this cabinet. So these six people who will discuss no deal and Brexit matters and what have you, Johnson's one of them. I mean, heaven knows what he'll do, whatever is convenient for Johnson. Gove. Now, Michael Gove, of course, his pitch in the leadership was, yes, I want Brexit, but I'm happy to delay Brexit beyond the end of October. Geoffrey Cox as well. It was interesting hearing Laura Koonsberg on the BBC's Brexit cast. Good podcast, not as good as ours, obviously. Or even Never Mind the Bar Charts. Hello, Mark, by the way. Koonsberg said that the sources that had been talking to her say that Geoffrey Cox is one of those people who will be pushing for an extension, who will be pushing against no deal. So the fact that you've got Cox and Gove in this inner alliance of magicians, I think, is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You've then got Sajid Javid, or the Saj, as he's known by his colleagues in the Treasury. Again, not necessarily, I don't really remember where he was in terms of no deal in his leadership pitch, but he wasn't like a no deal or bust.
No.
Steve Barclay, who, let's be honest, is just happy to be there. And Dominic Raab, who's an idiot.
Yeah.
So in the makeup of that inner alliance of magicians, that's not an inner circle of a cabinet that is hell-bent on no deal.
I actually think the notion of like the alliance of magicians being like what we call this is quite good, because it's almost like this cabinet is a way to try and put up the illusion of we're taking this seriously. And maybe they are. Maybe the illusion is real. But again, when you look at the membership, when you look at their views and you look at the individuals that were involved and their competence levels and their history, you go, is this a cabinet of people who do things? Or is this a cabinet of people who look like they're doing things? Because of that list, the ones that I would say have a track record of getting stuff done and getting it done effectively and efficiently, regardless of whether you agree with it or not, it's Cox, but he's going to be in there from a purely legal perspective.
I think he's just there for the voice.
And Gove, who gets stuff done. Barclay, as you say, is just happy to be there. Javid, did he actually do that much in any of his roles?
He said some terrible things about asylum seekers at the start of this year.
Yeah, and that's about it. Rob's, as you say, just an idiot, and we've seen no evidence to suggest that he can actually do anything effectively. You know, this isn't an alliance of magicians that's going to be effective at getting stuff done based on first appearances.
Mm. But I don't think there's almost much point in trying to speculate at the moment about Brexit, partly because there's lots of things being talked about which is quite depressing, but also because of the appointment of Dominic Cummings, which made a few waves as Johnson's de facto chief of staff. Damien McBride, who again is one of our celebrity listeners, hello Damien if you're listening, he put an interesting Twitter thread out about Cummings' hero being John Boyd, who's a war strategist from the Second World War. And apparently Boyd's guiding strategy was to confuse the enemy by doing what they least expect. So now, in terms of Brexit, people don't know if is the plan to try and go for a no-deal election in the autumn, or is that what they want us to think, so therefore they're going to pivot to a soft Brexit in the autumn and try and get a deal through? Or is that a double bluff and they are in fact going to go hell-bent for no deal? Or is that a triple bluff because Parliament might block it and then go, you see where I'm going with this, listeners? You end up kind of tying yourself in knots trying to speculate about this.
With the appointment of Cummings, you end up in the sort of territory where everybody starts trying to overthink everything. So you end up in situations where Boris Johnson was photographed with a chicken just as part of his general like duties as Prime Minister. Like, it's just one of those things that happen. But then you look online and people are saying, this is clearly a political manoeuvre, so that if you search for Boris Johnson chicken online, you just get this, rather than, you know, the people in chicken suits chasing after him for not calling an election or whatever, which people have apparently started doing. Yeah, I know. Which is just daft. It's just idiotic. I can guarantee you nobody is thinking on that level. This isn't fourth dimensional chess. This is just basic things that happen, and you're just being paranoid and overthinking everything. But Cummings operates very well in that kind of scenario, and that I think is something that will work very much in his favour, and he'll be able to kind of manipulate that to his and the government's advantage. Although, interestingly, when it comes to Cummings, his opinions on some of his own side are just as valid. If you want to kind of analyse where we are with in relation to Brexit, the man detests the ERG. He absolutely loathes them. He thinks they're a complete waste of space. That's a lot politer than what he's a phrase than what he's used on his blog previously. He's been was very critical about when Article 50 was triggered. Cummings, in a lot of ways, is an unknown quantity, partially because of the fact he's managed to develop this bit of a mystique for, is he playing four-dimensional chess with you? And because whilst he is a Brexiter, he's been very critical of how Brexit's been handled. And it basically boils down to a question of, does he view the position of the government as, that's it, we are where we are, we have to play with this ball now? Or does he view it as, we can get some extra time? You know, we can try and change the rules up a little bit here to give ourselves some advantage. And at the moment, we don't know.
No.
And that's really the kind of the core thing, I think, actually, of this government is where does Dominic Cummings come down? Because I think he's going to be the influential party here.
We described Steve Bannon in the past as an interesting wanker. And I don't think Dominic Cummings' worldview is as
interesting.
I was going to say warped and twisted and racist as Steve Bannon's, but he's definitely someone who very well read and got some very interesting views, even if then in practice that ends up coming across as someone who just doesn't take faults gladly. And when was Michael Gove's spat, I think, in government, ruffled a lot of feathers, not that, almost more with the Conservatives than the Lib Dems in the coalition government. And I think his attitude for civil service in particular will be an interesting one. Yeah. So part of the Brexit betrayal myth is somehow that Remainer civil servants have been thwarting the government, which is nonsense, but it'll be interesting to see how Cummings deals with Whitehall.
Yeah, I mean, he's already started to try and stamp his foot down on that within a day or so. We know that he started making basically demands that the leaking stops now.
What happened with that statement?
It was leaked. That was leaked on basically the same day that Gavin Williamson was reconfirmed to cabinet. I'm not saying I'm saying it's causative, but there's definitely a correlation. And we do know he was a bit of a leaker in the past, so.
There were three of them and Adeline, obviously. Something I think is interesting with the Johnson government is it feels to me quite similar to the start of Theresa May's premiership. Both began by trying to seek a change of the past. So May was very much, we need to redress the injustice of society. Johnson's play of sunny optimism, everything's going to be okay, is then a bit of a change from May's more dour, dogged image. May also sacked loads of cabinet ministers, famously sacked George Osborne, told him to go on the back benches and spend more time learning about the Conservative Party. People were also very excited by the roasting that Boris Johnson gave Corbyn at their first PMQs. But then, of course, May was reputed to have destroyed Corbyn in one of her first PMQs appearances, where essentially she did a full Thatcher impression, that remind you of anyone? Both have also had a bit of a boost in the polls, and enjoyed a bit of a honeymoon. In fact, though, May's boost in the polls was bigger than Johnson's boost in the polls.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's also some other kind of interesting areas of kind of like differentiation, but in terms of policy as well. When May became a prime minister, she started talking about, as you say, those burning social injustices, and she started talking up policy areas like grammar schools and areas like that, which had been put on the back burner from David Cameron's time as leader. Johnson has actually kind of done a similar thing, but in a more liberal and kind of like positive direction from the perspective of a left winger, in that he's kind of come out with some on effectively day one, started talking about, oh, maybe we could do an amnesty for illegal immigrants. I'm not saying he's going to do this. I don't think he will. But they started leaking these things, and these sort of things started appearing in the press, and journalists started discussing them. Which means it was clearly placed in some way, in all likelihood.
Probably by Gavin Williamson.
I think he did also kind of briefly mention something of it in his first speech at the dispatch box, but it was a very kind of mild passing comment. You've got today, kind of information seems to have linked that, oh, a number of his advisers have previously advocated for legalising cannabis. Again, I don't think he's going to do that, although it would actually be a sensible policy in many, many ways. If you legalised cannabis, you could probably deliver that $350 million for the NHS that you promised really, really quickly and really easily through the form of taxation of it.
Can't see that getting on the bus again.
No, I can't see it either. It's again suspicious that this has come about so very, very quickly. Probably been placed there, which means you can see a clear differentiation between the socially conservative Theresa May and, in a lot of ways, and we do know this to be broadly accurate, the more socially liberal Boris Johnson. One of the few areas where we do know that he has, I don't know if principles is like the right word, because I'm sure he would sell them out, but his instincts lean in a much more liberal direction on a number of areas.
Apart from what Islamic women were.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he'll sell them out for £5,000 a week, actually.
Yeah, pretty much. But there are some policy areas where he's putting some clear difference between him and Theresa May. So again, and it's all very much meant to be indicative of what kind of prime minister he's going to be. Let's wait and see. As I said, I don't think either of the things that he's kind of talked about, which would indicate him being a very liberal Tory, are actually going to occur. Like, I just can't see them actually being made feasible.
I've made this point on another podcast before. The idea that this Boris Johnson can appeal to the liberal instincts of the kind of people that got him a majority in London is just not going to happen. I don't think there will be an election in October. I'm going to make a prediction.
And you didn't even...
I didn't have to say Boris's name, but...
It just did then, so...
Indeed. I don't think the timetabling quite works, for reasons we'll probably have to go into later podcasts. But essentially, I don't think there will be an October election, but I think that this is a cabinet that is getting on an election footing. Question I don't quite get, though, yet, is how Johnson wins a majority without Scotland, where his polling numbers are terrible, or without Remain Tories as well, who might lose a lot of a lot of votes to the Dems. So presumably he has to do what Theresa May tried to do and failed, which is win over a lot of Labour seats. Now, if Theresa May tried to do that in 2017 and didn't do that, partly because the election campaign was terrible, but also because policies like the dementia tax, policies like bringing back fox hunting, I think were quite damaging to the Tories, with a lot of people, that old, long-time Labour voters who were maybe Tory curious. But those policies made them think, oh, well, these are the same old Tories, I'm not going to vote for them this time, what have you. You look at Johnson's spending pledges, waving the chequebook, saying the North's going to get money, there are going to be new transport links and all this kind of stuff. You can definitely see that they are trying to not repeat the mistake May made of saying, well, there is no magic money tree, I know you don't like cuts, but we have to do it and what have you. And instead, the line is literally, we're going to cut taxes and increase government spending.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. Fiscal Phil's spreadsheets have gone out the window. Philip Hammond's focused on ensuring that, in practice, austerity stayed in place is gone now. Like, honestly, I think you could you will probably find over the next 3 months or so probably a load of quite high profile commitments in some quite positive areas in terms of funding for the NHS, education, social care, social services, and things like that. And enough in certain areas where you will see basically Boris Johnson say, austerity is over, let the good times roll.
You've already seen this with police numbers.
Yeah.
They're going to recruit 20,000 police officers, which will mean that the net increase of police officers since the Tories came to power in 2010 will be zero.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, will that be enough? But you can see... I can see there's a logic there.
Yeah. There's a strategy. There is a definite strategy there. And who knows? Maybe it will work. But the problem is... it's reliant on an awful lot of things changing. It's reliant on those people breaking away from voting Labour and then voting Tory based solely on Brexit. And you hit a kind of a question of when is the best time to reach those people? Because if it's after Brexit's been delivered, why would they care?
Well, again, it's this fallacy, I think, that Labour voters in the Heartlands and the North and Midlands wanted Brexit, and that's why they were going to vote there. Like, a majority of Labour voters would like to remain in the European Union. The vote, and Labour's lost in terms of the polling and in terms of the European elections, a big chunk of its 2017 vote. only about 10% of that has gone for the Brexit Party. The vast majority of that has gone for Lib Dems and the Greens.
Yeah.
Can't imagine what their policies have got in common.
No, it's a mystery.
That's it for this episode. We'll have another episode out towards the end of this week on the Lib Dems, on Jo Swinson, on her victory, what it means. We'll have a valedictory discussion about the many faces of Vince Cable. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, we have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter @JamesCram, and Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @paperbackrioter.
Mine's @acousticradical.
Happy plotting.